Hello and welcome to Target Zero Hunger, a podcast by the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization. I'm your host, Sandra Ferrari. Today's episode focuses on charcoal, and we begin inside the kitchen of Hanan, who lives in a thatched hut in Sudan's Darfur region. Every day, Hanan buys charcoal to cook food for her family. Around the world, 3 billion people, like Hanan, lack access to clean fuels and technologies for cooking. In Africa, charcoal production has doubled in the past 2 decades, and demand is likely to keep growing as more people move to urban centers. It is cleaner and easier to use than firewood, and is often cheaper and more readily available than gas or electricity. But the surge in charcoal use is contributing to forest degradation, and in some areas also to deforestation, especially around large urban centers. So what can be done to make charcoal use more sustainable? To turn black charcoal green? Joining me for this episode is a panel of experts. In studio is Eva Mueller, Director of FAO's Forestry Policy and Resources Division. Eva has an extensive background in forest policy issues across Africa, Latin America, and Asia. On the phone, we have two guests, Seema Patel from the Global Alliance for Clean Cook Stoves, and the Alliance is an initiative hosted by the UN Foundation that supports large-scale adoption of clean and safe household cooking solutions. And secondly, we have Wanjira Matai, Chair of the Green Belt Movement based in Kenya and Senior Partnership Advisor for the W Power Project, which is the Partnership on Women's Entrepreneurship in Renewables. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Eva, let's begin with you. FAO is working with partners on greening the charcoal sector. Can you describe what that involves and why it's important?
Well, you already mentioned the importance of charcoal as a source of energy for millions and millions of people, mostly for cooking and heating. But there are a couple of problems related to charcoal as a source of energy. And the two biggest ones are that it's not produced sustainably and it's used inefficiently. And that makes the charcoal value chain a substantial emitter of greenhouse gases and therefore contributes to climate change. Now, greening the value chain, the charcoal value chain, means that the wood used to produce charcoal comes from sustainably managed forests, that efficient kilns are used in the conversion process, and that the charcoal is burned in improved fuel-saving stoves. And this can lead to substantial reductions of greenhouse gas emissions in the whole value chain up to 80%, which is very significant.
So greening the charcoal sector can be described as using wood better rather than using more wood?
Yes, this is correct. Currently, the charcoal is mostly produced using very simple technologies with low productivity and a low conversion rate. And similarly, the stoves used to burn the charcoal are often pretty rudimentary and inefficient. So these two factors combined result in substantial losses of wood and energy. By improving the efficiency, less wood will be required to produce and use charcoal. In other words, more energy from wood does not mean more wood used for energy.
The charcoal sector is largely unregulated in many countries. How significant a barrier is this to progress?
This is a very important barrier because, as you said, the charcoal production, marketing and trade in many countries takes place in the informal sector. And the lack of regulations means that governments forgo billions of dollars in revenue every year. And it also contributes to deforestation and forest degradation due to the unsustainable and sometimes even illegal exploitation of forest resources. So if we want to develop a sustainable charcoal sector, the entire value chain should be targeted, and policies have to be streamlined at national, regional, and at local levels, in harmonization with broader policy processes on forests, on energy, development, urban planning, land use planning, and climate change.
What about technological advances in charcoal alternatives, including non-wood options?
Technological advances in renewable energy development, energy efficiency improvement in the last decades have been helping to diversify energy options in developing countries. For example, there are biogas technologies that use organic wastes to produce biogas for cooking and at the same time produce bioslurry as fertilizer, and those have been disseminated in many countries. And there's also now a significant cost reduction and performance improvement in solar heating systems that bring opportunities of clean and renewable energy solutions as alternatives to wood energy. In the long run, these technologies could help to cut down the demand for charcoal and fuel wood, and thereby help release the human pressure on forest resources. But they're unlikely to substantially replace food fuels in the shorter term, let's say in the coming decades. So we need to make efforts to green the charcoal and fuel wood value chains, and that is very much required in the foreseeable future.
Wanjia, is there anything that Eva was talking about that you might want to add to?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that I have found as I advocate for this issue on behalf of the WPower Hub is that we have focused inordinately around what we think communities need. So we have come up with wonderful clean cook stoves. We've also come up with many alternatives, and I agree completely with Eva that they're not likely to offset or replace charcoal, mainly because there's the other side of the equation, which is the preferences. You have communities that have a strong preference for charcoal, whether it's for the flavor of the food, a cultural attachment, and of course for the role that it plays in a social family situation where people sit around the fire. And acknowledging the power of that is to begin to understand why adoption or shifting away from charcoal has been so slow, and that we begin to change our narrative as well, not so much from a complete shift, but more from how we do it better and how we produce more sustainably and burn it more efficiently. I think those are really important. We've also seen on the technology side innovations around especially kilns. You know, the most common conversions of wood to charcoal produce 10% in the usual earth kilns. And so we're starting to see innovations of very local improved kilns in drums and others that are at least 30% efficiency, so three times more efficient than earth kilns. So I think those are starting to show there's some promise there, which is local. And I know as we look at further improvements in technology, this will get even better.
Let's go to Seema Patel, who's on the phone. As a reminder, she's with the Global Alliance for Clean Cookstoves, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Seema Patel, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
How hard is it to encourage people to use a different type of stove that they're used to? Like, how significant a hurdle is behavioral change?
Well, clean cooking is a really complex behavioral challenge. We're talking about 3 billion people living in households where daily meals are prepared over open fires and traditional cook stoves. And this way of cooking has been passed down for generations and has really deep social and cultural ties. So when you talk about making a transition to a brand new cook stove or a fuel, it really does require a dramatic behavioral shift away from something that's really deeply ingrained in the way that families cook and in the way that communities have been cooking for generations. And then in addition to that, families have to be convinced to allocate what is often a really significant portion of their already constrained household budget toward investing in a new and often unfamiliar cooking appliance for their home. So facilitating the transition to something like an improved cook stove or a new fuel like pellets or ethanol, which are things that we're now seeing more of in the market, it's also very difficult. And then for something like LPG, liquefied petroleum gas, many of the populations that we work with, they're familiar with this fuel. It's a very clean fuel, and it's often what they aspire to use. But the transition is very slow, mainly in part to there being a misconception about the costs of something like LPG, that it's maybe only a fuel for the rich or because of some of the safety concerns. But in reality, the ongoing costs are often comparable or even cheaper than fuels like charcoal, especially when something like charcoal is purchased on a regular basis in small quantities.
So what innovations are around the corner in terms of alternative energy cookstoves?
Yeah, there's actually quite a number of different innovations, both around stoves and fuels. We are seeing a lot of research and development prototype stoves that are showing positive gains in the field in terms of performance and consumer demand. Another type of innovation we are seeing are technology platforms that incorporate both innovative stoves and fuels. These are things like reusable smart fuel canisters that can actually be docked and refilled at physical cloud-connected kiosks that are located inside neighborhood shops in places like East Africa. So they basically serve the same purpose as ATMs, where you can get just the amount of money that you need, but they're for ethanol cooking fuel, which I think is a really interesting innovation.
Seema Patel, thank you. And Wandira Mathai, let's talk a bit about your work. You're involved in encouraging women entrepreneurs to bring clean energy to people in parts of Africa and India. Can you share some of the success stories you've seen so far?
One of the success stories I'll say is Cookswell GCOS. This is a local organization in Kenya that has been committed to the charcoal value chain in particular, that is starting to see innovating around especially kilns. And they've seen, they have one kiln that is under development, the Kenya Njui kiln, that is starting to see 30 and 40% conversion rates for charcoal, and then also looking at opportunities for other products that come out of the charcoal, liquid smoke, and other opportunities that even have a higher value than charcoal itself. One of the things that Cookswell GCO does is they market seeds. They look at the entire life cycle of the charcoal value chain, so they of charcoal itself. So they sell you the seeds along with a kiln, along with a jiko that you'll use, or the stove that you'll use to burn that fuel, and also the tools that you'll need to cut small branches. So the integration of seed to fuel in one product is one of the great innovations we're seeing coming out of organizations like Cookswell.
And how far along is this kind of work? I mean, how successful are they at this point? Is this still quite a young initiative? Would you describe it as that?
Well, I think the attitude changes are not that old, right? So we've had a long way before we saw this policy enforcement coming through. Even though we still have some good policies now, the enforcement is poor, so we still have a long way to go there. These good examples and these cases are making a very strong platform for more of this to occur. Of course, don't forget that charcoal has always been controlled for many years by large, powerful cartels, and so breaking through those is not that easy. But we're seeing some success in organizations like WPower that is shining a spotlight on this issue and advocating for it globally. The FAO and others, I think, are creating the pathway that will give the momentum that's needed to grow it fast. And I think the momentum is growing. There are alternatives, particularly for cooking and others, but charcoal is starting to get attention. One of my favorite examples is the example of India, where very recently we heard Prime Minister Modi with an extremely ambitious project to get universal adoption of LPG. And what they're starting to find out is even with that universal program that is going extremely well, almost every household in India is going to have LPG, I believe, by 2030, there's still a preference for some cooking to be done on charcoal. And I think that just is such a powerful metaphor for the fact that charcoal is not going away, even with such ambitious and successful programs like we have in India. So I think that is another example that is showing us that we need to give charcoal its due attention.
My next question to you is, what role does gender play in charcoal production and use and efforts to make the sector more sustainable?
Well, I think it's quite central. You have women who are often the ones who are purchasing the charcoal. They're not the producers, they're not the marketers, they're not the transporters, but they're the users. And our goal at WPower is to encourage and to drive the engagement and leadership of women across the value chain. So how can they enter more sectors of this value chain and perhaps even demonstrate with the evidence that is out there that by engaging women more centrally, we actually create success. It is good for business because they know these fuels really well, because they actually are more successful at marketing them, and of course because they use them a lot more than others. So I think the role of women across the value chain is being supported more and more by the evidence that sits out there.
Eva, do you have anything to add here?
I find it really encouraging to hear about all these examples from the field, because what we very often hear is that the women are at the losing end. They're the ones who have to collect the firewood and walk long distances. They're the ones who suffer the health risks and so on. But to see that the charcoal value chain can actually be used to empower women, I think this is a very, very encouraging trend.
I have one final question here, and I'd like to put to everyone. Wanjira, we'll start with you. One of the global goals that all nations have committed to is Goal 7, ensuring access to affordable, reliable, sustainable, and modern energy for all by the year 2030. So, Wanjira, how achievable is that goal from your perspective?
It is achievable if we are honest and committed to looking at all opportunities and possibilities for what communities need, and these needs are often differentiated depending on where you are, rural versus urban. And then one of the most important things, the one we ignore most, that I mentioned, that we are cognizant of community preferences.
In your opinion, Seema, how achievable is that goal from your perspective?
We believe the goal is achievable, but it's not likely to happen without scaling up of the adoption of clean cooking. And in fact, clean cooking can directly help deliver progress across 10 of the 17 SDGs, not just Goal 7. Based on some estimates that have been done by the Global Alliance, the trends suggest that we'll be reaching our 100 million household goal with clean and or efficient stoves and fuels actually ahead of our 2020 goal, which is really, really positive news both for the Alliance and our partners, but also for these global goals. We estimate that about 82 million cook stoves and fuels have been distributed since 2010, and of that, 53 million are clean and or efficient. So based on current trends in the sector, we project that going forward, the majority of cook stoves and fuels being distributed will meet the clean or efficient criteria. So this is a lot of really good progress, but we want to continue enabling progress beyond our 100 million goal and beyond our sort of mandate of 10 years to continue to ensure access to affordable, reliable, and sustainable modern energy for everybody.
Eva, what do you think?
I'm happy to see optimism, and I definitely share that optimism, even though we all know that Goal 7 of the Sustainable Development Goals is very ambitious, as are all of the Sustainable Development Goals. But countries have committed themselves to achieving those goals by 2030, and if they want to do that, they have to become serious about changing things and changing the way of doing business. And in the area of energy, that implies political will and a political commitment to improve the value chain of charcoal and wood energy in general and stop demonizing it. Because as Wanjira says very clearly, it's not only there to stay, we all know that, but it's also for many a cultural preference. So we cannot just say, let's replace all wood energy by electricity or gas to become more modern and more clean and so on and so forth. No, what we need to do is we need to focus on improving the production and the use to make it more clean, more sustainable, and more efficient of what is already there. And that will then allow us to achieve the SDG 7. That requires political will because for many, many years, policymakers have absolutely ignored this issue, and they cannot continue ignoring it. So cautious optimism from my side.
This has been an excellent conversation. Eva Mueller, Seema Patel, and Wanjira Matai, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you also. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
This is Target Zero Hunger, a podcast from the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. Visit us at fao.org/news/podcast, where you can find a link to the new FAO report on greening the charcoal value chain. You can email us your questions or feedback at fao-audio@fao.org. I'm Sandra Ferrari. Thanks for listening.